Composing, bringing attention to the here and now, the way it is. This, just noticing, being present, breathing, body sitting, sound of silence. So these are just observing the way it is. It's not thinking about how things should be. So really, that's this ability we have to compose ourselves. Not when we start thinking about ourselves and the world, then we are pulled out into feelings of, you know, wanting or not wanting, dreading, hoping, expecting, planning for the future, regretting the past. The whole realm of dukkha starts operating. But just in awareness, there's no dukkha, no suffering. So like discerning, or punya, the Pali word punya, wisdom, discernment, is to know that suffering is like this, non-suffering is like this. Self is like this, non-self is like this. It's discernment. Attachment is like this, non-attachment is like this. As a way of informing yourself, know clearly the way it is. And then the path is apparent, because the path of non-suffering is non-attachment, non-self, non-suffering. And when there's self and with self and suffering, attachment, then we're back in the realm of dukkha. So we have the what they call the sukha pariteva tukha tomanasa upayasa apaye sampayoko tukho piyehi vipa yoko tukho yampi jang na lapati dampi tukang. That's suffering. And the teaching of the dependent origination, paticca samuppada, this is, I found this very worthy one to reflect on. Because it always starts out, and these are, this relates to the Four Noble Truths, so the first part is about the second noble truth, and the third is the second half is about the Nirodha, or the third noble truth. So you have avijja bhajjaya sankhara, sankhara bhajjaya vijnana, and so forth too. Sukha pariteva tukha tomanasa. So this is like avijja, ignorance of Dhamma. This is the cause of suffering. Whatever we start, when we come from avijja, from a self-view, from conceit, from liking, disliking, from the created world, an attachment to it, an identity, then the result's always going to be suffering. Now this isn't a doctrine, so it's to be reflected on, you know, you're internalizing this paticca samuppada. It's not meant to be some kind of intellectual theory. But just starting from the beginning, if avijja is, I'm sitting here with pain in my knees and I'm trying to practice meditation in order to become enlightened. So I start with avijja, and after an hour of sitting here, I end up with dukkha. So this is also conveys this, the avijja, you know, when we start from ignorance of the truth, then it affects everything, our emotional our body, our emotions, the five khandhas are affected by that avijja. So you have the avijja, vijja, sankhara, and the sankharas include all phenomena or conditions. Sankhara, vijja, vijnana, consciousness is then affected by this avijja, and then vijnana, bhajya, nama-rupa, nama-rupa, salayatana, pasa-vedana, and so forth, to the way that the whole process starts operating, affected by avijja. So how we perceive and experience life is going to be the experience of dukkha. How could it be otherwise? So then we have done the vedana, patsa vedana, dana upadana, the impingement on the senses of the feeling that comes from that, and then the reaction to that, a form of clinging. If it's pleasant, we want to hold on. If it's miserable, we want to get rid of it. Dana, desire, attachment, bhava, becoming, we become, jati, we're reborn, becoming, born into that state which leads to sukha pariteva, dukkha-tomana supayasa, grief, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief and despair, the dukkha. So this is interesting, just to explore, like this dhanha upadana, or pasa vedana dhanha upadana. So that these terms are, you know, that with their English translations, are kind of ways of reflecting on experience here and now. Then the third noble truth is about nirodha or cessation. So sankhara, with right understanding, with vichā, when there's no avichā, then the whole thing disintegrates. Nirodha takes place. So whatever point you awaken, then the whole process stops, just ceases. So the avijja, then what is avijja, or knowledge of the truth? And for me, this is the stillness of the mind. There's no self. So it's not like I've a kind of studied Buddhism for years and come out with some theory about no self, because that's another, you know, word, another conceit maybe that I might be attached to. But in the emptiness of the moment, vichā is like no self. This is no self. Then there's no suffering. There's no dukkha as a result. So consciousness can still operate in that, but the thing is, one isn't unconscious or dead or anything like that. But the process, the kind of ignorance, the rising of suffering out of ignorance, ceases at the very moment you awaken. You're mindful, in other words. So like the third noble truth, as I say, the second noble truth is the insight of letting go. The three aspects of the second noble truth is the causes of suffering are avijja, ignorance of truth, desire, the three kinds of desire and attachment and identity that comes to through that ignorance, then the insight is to let go. Release yourself from that trap of desire, not suppressing it, but leaving it be. Accepting it, but letting it be. In other words, it's like desires that go on, you're aware, but you find yourself attached to desire, then tell yourself, let go of the desire, and just let it be, and then you begin to see the desire as an object, not rather than being the person with desire. Desire is what it is, and it ceases. So then letting go, putting down these kind of words, you know. The third insight of the Second Noble Truth is letting go has been accomplished. You know what it is. You know the reality of it. And it's not just some idea or that you're trying to let go anymore. You actually know the reality. Letting go is like this. Non-attachment. Letting go. Letting be. Which takes us to the Nirodha Satya, or the Third Noble Truth of cessation. If you let go of desire, its nature, because it arises, it ceases. And you have this perspective on cessation. You're letting the natural flow take place, the arising and ceasing of sankharas. You're no longer the creature that's trying to control things and keep something that has arisen that you like, or get rid of everything that is painful and unpleasant. The conditions that arise that are painful and unpleasant, you want to get rid of them. The endless struggle and dukkha that's caused from that resistance to life, or the trying to hold on to everything. Trying to hold on to the good stuff and trying to is an endless struggle, which you'll never win. You'll always lose, because avijja is the cause of suffering. Avijja is death itself. So then avijja comes from letting things cease. It isn't getting rid of anything, but it's allowing things that have arisen to cease. And realizing this, cessation is like this. And so the insight is into the Third Noble Truth is there is the end of suffering. It should be realized. So it's satika dapandi, the realizing the truth. Realization, recognition, non-attachments like this, non-sufferings like this, non-self is like this. So you're in this natural state of poised attention, an inner poise, an openness, receptivity, where you see things as they are. There's a knowing, not from concepts, ideas, theories, views, opinions, positions, feelings, but what we call jnana dasana, or insight knowledge. Jnana is knowledge, is a profound knowledge, insight knowledge. It's not just intellectual knowledge, knowing about things, having perceptions for conditions, but a profound wisdom knowledge. So the discerning then is like with the emptiness, sound of silence. Explore that. Create yourself intentionally. I used to create myself in all different, you know, my fears and my good side, my conceits and my fears and myself as a person, and listen to this personality. That self. Self is like that. It's a creation. I have to think. I have to create myself to be my personality. I have to really believe in my feelings are me and this body is me. I have to really, you know, get lost in the conviction that this is really me. This body is really me and my feelings and memories. And then operate from this sense of me is like this, self is like this. So you're observing self, and this when I create myself, even in this intentional way, this by hearing this me and mine and what I think and what I like and don't like, you know, it's not peaceful. I can't create a peaceful tomato. Because the very, you know, creation of itself is itself changing and unsatisfactory. So it doesn't lead to peace, it only leads to suffering. But I'm doing this not from some kind of Buddhist theory that everything suffering, but from observing what is suffering. To become a person, to become a self, is always like being creating yourself with something unsatisfactory, incomplete, unfulfilled, imperfect, death-bound. But then non-self, then I stay in the stillness, the silence, the nada. So I'm letting go of the concepts, the memories, the identities with the five khandhas, but the consciousness is still present. But I'm not in projecting into consciousness anything. It's still and discerning. So I don't go into a trance, you know, I'm not kind of blissed out in any way or in some, you know, kind of lost in some heavenly realm or some, you know, or just out of it. I'm fully present, but this is non-self. So it's like the discerning, the punya, you're discerning that non-self is like this. Anatta is this. Non-attachment is this. Like to create myself, then I have to attach to the perceptions and memories, assumptions I have about myself as a person. Non-attachment is like this. So it's empty, but consciousness is complete, full, empty, no self, non-attachment, non-suffering. You see what I'm pointing at, this discerning, knowing, discerning the difference between suffering and non-suffering, self and non-self, attachment and non-attachment. Like Nibbana is the realization of non-attachment, the reality of non-attachment. So by discerning this way, the path becomes very clear. You know, if the path of suffering is by attaching to everything, believing in yourself as these limited conditions, and wallowing in misery. That's, you take that direction. But I assume because you're here at Spirit Rock, you know, you're trying to get out of that one, find a way out of that trap into non-suffering, Nibbana, liberation, enlightenment, whatever words you want to refer to. It's like this. And then it's, you know, but I'm not looking for anything. It's like it's non-attachment, non-self. It's not projecting, looking, wanting, expecting anymore, but recognizing. Reality is this way. The illusory world is through attachment. Because we, you know, ask each one of you what your world is like. We think we all live in the same world as personalities, don't we? But every one of us lives in a world of our own creation. You know, so we share certain things in common, but so much of our life is, you know, just very personal and unique to ourselves. That world we create is, you know, it's not the objective world that we believe we're really living in, but we're living in a world of our own creation. And that's sometimes why it's so difficult relating to others, isn't it, to each other, because we're coming from different worlds. Sometimes you feel you're living with a bunch of aliens. So letting the world go, then the natural state of being is consciousness, which is not a world that we create. We create our worlds in, project them into consciousness, but when we stop doing that, letting go of the world, then consciousness and wisdom are aligned, and we can instruct consciousness, this conscious moment, with wisdom, discerning, rather than with ignorance and attachment to ignorant views. So the cessation, this third noble truth, this is this is emptiness, this is deathlessness. This is where you have that insight and that seeing of the path, because the Eightfold Path then appears. You know, this is the path. There's a certainty. It's not just theoretical anymore. Or, you know, you're not trying to find it. You know it. This is it. Non-suffering, non-self, non-attachment. So then cultivating this, and this is for pavana, the word pavana again, cultivate, developing awareness in daily life. And this is what, I'm saying, what monasticism is all about, supposed to be anyway, is a conventional form for cultivating the path, just an expedient means. And the Buddha established a monastic sangha. It wasn't, you know, wasn't to make an elite priesthood or, you know, make us into some kind of, you know, caste, but to just a convention that if used properly, then it helps develop or cultivate this path. Because, let's say, the symbol, the robes, the alms mendicancy, everything around it is not meant for grasping, but for reminding, you know, for cultivating awareness. So when we talk about stream entry, sotapanna, well, these four stages, and the 12 fetters, and I found these very helpful reflections on, you know, just an experience, because these are really brilliant teachings. They're not meant to be taken as some kind of attainment. And you're going to say, I'm a sotapanna, I've got a certificate. And I've seen that in Thailand. There used to be one monastery gave certificates. Or going around claiming you're an arahant or whatever, but these are, you know, this is against the vinaya, you know, the kind of, it's a varajika or a disrobing offense if you go around deluding people by claiming you've attained, you're in these stages of attainment. They sound like attainments, and you're not, you know, if your just intention is to delude others, you know, so that. Varajikas are a serious offenses of kind of bloody-minded intention to delude. So one is going around announcing oneself as an enlightened master in order to, you know, get a following so you can get their money. Well, that'll be like Varajika. But sometimes also in meditation we experience blissful states where we think we're enlightened. So we go into very nice, peaceful states. I remember I was in this very blissful state for a long time. And I thought, I'm enlightened now. This must be what an arahant is like. I never felt like this before. Then I had to, you know, it worked. I stayed that way for quite a few days, and then I had to go to the immigration office. I don't know what happened to the arahant, but it disappeared. But that isn't a Varajika offense for monks. Just, you know, we overestimate it out of, you know, just overestimation or delusion. We can think we've attained. But so these are not to be taken as personal things. Like Ajahn Chah never say anything to me, whether you are an arahant. He'd never imply that he was or wasn't. Because this doesn't make any sense, really. You don't become anything like that. You don't become an arahant. These are references for looking at experience. They're helpful teachings that help us to get perspective on the kind of obstructions, the fetters that we attach to, that blind us to the path. So it's not like getting a B.A., M.A., Ph.D. So even the word attainment, they're not attainments. You don't attain. It's a relinquishing thing. You remember, well, the spiritual path is all about relinquishment, not attaining. You don't get anything. It's learning to let go of everything. Anything you get, you're going to lose. So that's where, you know, you can't get special states, refined experiences, and elevated, conscious, blissful states, but they're not sustainable. You know, because they're created. They're dependent on conditions. But this awareness is not dependent. This path, Eightfold Path, is not dependent on conditions being any certain way. So it's not an attainment or achievement. But language does give that impression. You read it in the Pali Canon and so forth, they do sound like attainments. Because it's just language, really. Language is dualistic. So you've got to recognize the limitation of thinking and language and not bind yourself to that limitation. But language can be useful, you know, like the Dhamma teachings used with awareness. That's what they're for. They're not meant to be positions you take on life and attach to Buddhist ideas and Buddhist concepts. You know, but to use these concepts for investigating reality in the present. So like the Paticca-samuppada is not some kind of theory, complicated theory that you have to believe in. Well, there's various, you know, controversies in the Sangha about, you know, Paticca-samuppada and three lives or simultaneous arising, and monks love to have arguments about this. Some take very rigid stands, you know, it has to be three lives. And then they find quotes from the scriptures of proving this, and then there's a simultaneous arising, and they can find quotes and use even the same quotes to prove their theory. So it's a trick, the intellect's pretty tricky, you know. You can almost justify any position you want to take by quoting the scriptures. So it's not an intellectual process that we're encouraging, but using the intellect, you know, in a skillful way to look at the reality of this moment. To awaken to it. Observe it. So when we talked about realization of cessation, I like that word, realization, because it's a common enough word in, you know, in this ordinary parlance. If you realize that, and you realize what you're saying, and it's kind of used as in all different ways, but in this context, it's reality, awakening to reality, the reality of this moment. The conditions cease. Cessation is like this. Nirodha, when suffering ceases, what's left? When the self, the ego ceases, when there's no attachment, when attachment ceases, this is non-suffering. So there's still consciousness. I'm not unconscious or in a trance, but cessation is like this. So it's like you're really, you know, it's this discernment is sati and panya and consciousness in this present moment, here and now. Pachubana Dhamma is like this. I'm really noticing, you know, this is not just some kind of, you know, flippant tinkering with consciousness and playing with words, but it's a real discernment, recognition through noticing, really knowing what self is when becoming this ego, this, and being attached to desires and the suffering that results, really knowing this, not just reacting to it with some wish to get rid of it, but explore suffering, really open to it as First Noble Truth, really understand it, receive it, accept it, look into it, explore it, investigate it, get to the root of it, and understand it, the causes of suffering, you know, desire, not just get rid of desire, but it's to know desire. What is desire? You can know desire because you're not a desire. You can observe desire. If you were desire, you wouldn't, one desire can't observe another desire. But you can observe desire as you're experiencing it. So desire arises, I want something, I want to become something, I want to get rid of something, is like this. What is it that observes, what knows this desire is not desire, isn't it? It's not, there's no desire in awareness. Awareness can observe desire as an object. It's a, what they call aramana in Pali, or mental objects. Desire arises and ceases. According to conditions, things stimulate you and then the desires arise. You don't have the same desire as a kind of continuum forever in your consciousness. They arise and cease according to all of the conditions present that are affecting your conscious moment. So the aim is to realize this consciousness and inform it with paññā, discerning, to know the difference between conditioned, unconditioned. The conditioned is like this, unconditioned is like this. And so this is, you know, watching, observing. So, say, just noticing the body sitting here, you know, this form. Still here, it's a condition. If I start attaching to it, you know, I'm this body, then it seems like I become this body, and then the whole sets off the whole drama of being this body. You know, I'm a man, I'm a 70-year-old, I'm an old man. I'm a monk. You know. And all these things, you know, start, you know, the whole world of being an old man called Lumpo Sumato goes into operation. That world arises. But if there's awareness, then that world doesn't arise. Things are as they are. The body is still, you know, condition that's 70 years old, but there's non-attachment. So non-attachment is like this, non-self. And non-suffering. So then by this reflectiveness investigation, then we see the path, because the path is very clear, very precise. It's not a kind of fuzzy, kind of difficult thing that you're not quite sure whether it is a path or not. This is the path. But to know this path, you have to, you know, use this punya family, not just ideas about whether you can see the path or not, or whether you're, what you think is a path is true or false, or what, you know, because then you're caught in, back into the thinking process, ideas and sense of yourself, and that's not the path. That is the path to death, in other words. As a pamado macho no padang, heedlessness is the way to death. Apamado amata padang, mindfulness, the path to the deathless. Amata padang, amata is deathless. Apamado is heedfulness, being heedful, being mindful. Present is the amatapadang, is the deathless. Pamado is a Pali word for being heedless, not mindful, is the way to death. Machuno padang. Machuno padang is the path to death. So the attachment to the body, identity with it, the self views, all the rest, the sankharas, is the path to death, the machunopadang. By identifying and limiting yourself to that, then you always have this fear of death. You know, fear of loss, fear of suffering, fear of failure, fear of sickness, fear of everything. Because in the future, all that's going to happen, isn't it? You get older, you don't get younger. You get weaker. You get diseases and body weakens, and then it dies. So in terms of, you know, the conditioned realm, this is just the way it is. So as long as my identity is with death, then you know, out of ignorance, then I'm caught in this fear. So I need to be frightened of on that level. But in discerning the deathless, then that fear is no longer a problem, because you know the deathless is the reality, and you're no longer so convinced and so aligned with the death-bound condition. You let them go, release yourself from that limitation.